final speaker for today is Mike Reseller. He's a product strategy specialist for Vim. Mike will speak on Hyper-V replica, adding a new defense layer to your disaster recovery plan. Please put your hands together for Mike.
Thank you. This on? All right, awesome. Good evening, everybody. Thank you for being here. I know it's probably been a long day, lots of brains fried, lots of information. And I know you all want to go home because, you know, all the information inside, but I've got rather bad news for you guys. So normally this presentation should have taken 1 hour and 15 minutes because I put a lot of information in it. The idea is that by the time you go home or go outside of this room, you know everything you need to know about Hyper-V replica to start planning it, to look at it in POCs, or actually even go into production. What I've forgotten, or maybe I didn't read the emails very well from Raymond, was that I only have 50 minutes, which means I'm really going to fry your brains now. So my apologies for that, but I'll do my best to keep it as light as possible. Now, what I want to talk about today is Hyper-V replica. Hyper-V replica as it exists today. Today, why today? Because if you're going to wait until Windows Server vNext, which will have some nice enhancements, that also means you will have to wait until 2016 at least. Everybody probably heard the announcement, Microsoft is not shipping it before 2016, so that's still a long time, and we're only March 2015. Now, also very important in the title, as you can see, I've added the word adding a new defense layer to your disaster recovery plan. And that is pretty important. It's just a part of your disaster recovery plan or your business continuity plan. It's not a backup replacer. It's not. It will not replace clustering or any other HA availability solution you have there. It's just another defense that you can use in case something goes wrong. And that's very important. I've met too many people that said, I saw Hyper-V replica, I love it, I'm throwing everything else out. I hope if something goes wrong, he's got a good exit plan at that moment. Because it will solve certain scenarios, it doesn't solve everything. If you have a virus in your service, the virus is replicated. There are many other use cases which Hyper-V replica just won't solve your problem. You need something else. It also is not a high availability solution. Yes, if something goes wrong, you can quickly start up the replica and continue working. But that quickly can still be 10 minutes, 15 minutes, depending on the workload you need to start. That's not high availability. Clustering is high availability. Something goes down, and we start up at the other node as soon as possible. So think of it as a good idea to investigate, but certainly do not throw any other defense plan out of there. All right, that being said, let's look at why we would consider Hyper-V replica. This is it, cost. Cost, simplicity, it's out of the box, it comes from Microsoft, it works natively with Hyper-V. Now, over the past 15, 20 years, when I started working in IT, and yes, unfortunately, I'm that old already, high availability was expensive. Replication meant spending a lot of money. Many IT shops, many smaller organizations simply did not have that money. Today, there is a solution, which is rather cost-effective, which you can use, and which doesn't cost you an arm and a leg, as I believe it's Infront saying on their boot as well. So this is probably the main reason why you want to look at it. That and the fact that it's actually working very well in certain scenarios. And that's another thing I want you to take away from this session today. It won't fit every scenario. If it fits in your environment, then please have a look at it. You will be very happy. If it doesn't fit, well, there are other ways of resolving this with other solutions. There are enough third-party solutions out there that can deliver the same thing, but fix certain issues that Hyper-V replica can't. So we're going to certainly talk about that as well. So, quick overview, what it is, what's the relevance, the capabilities we have, what are some considerations when you deploy it. Unfortunately, don't get me wrong, I do love Microsoft, But whenever they are at one of their roadshows or their marketing events, they say Hyper-V is replica is easy. Next, finish, boom, it runs. Yeah, no. You need to keep a couple of things in your mind. Their demo systems, they're easy systems. Server 1, network, server 2, done. That indeed is easy. In a real environment, it proves to be a little bit more challenging on the resources, so you need to keep your head with it. We're going to talk a lot about PowerShell. I will going to sound like a broken record by the end of this session, but you have to keep in mind that a lot of things you have in Hyper-V replica, you can only achieve through PowerShell. And I'm going to give you some tips as well when you start doing deployments. All right. So a quick overview. Hyper-V replica is inbox replication. Well, they call it inbox replication, so you can kind of compare it with Outlook or an email system or something like that. Why? Because what happens on the main production server, you're keeping the things that are changing in the virtual machine into some sort of message, some sort of log. At certain intervals, and we're going to talk about that one later, what the intervals are, you're going to ship those logs to the replica server and apply them to the replica. That's why we call it inbox replication. It is built for disaster recovery scenarios, some of them. Again, not all of them, but for specific scenarios where you can use it for. It is application agnostic, which means we don't care what's running inside the virtual machine. As long as the operating system in the virtual machine and the application inside of the virtual machine is still supported by Microsoft, then you're good to go. One little remark on this one. Microsoft Hyper-V replica team says everything is supported. Exchange team says, yeah, I don't like it. Of course, this is one of these workloads that you have to keep in consideration. Do you want Hyper-V replica for your Exchange servers, or are you going to use DAC for your Exchange servers? Both have the same purpose, and probably the DAC in this case is the smarter solution than having Hyper-V replica. And last but not least, and this is pretty important, it's storage agnostic. They don't care what's kind of storage is running inside A or inside B. They don't care. If you remember the good old days 10 years ago, if you want to have replication, that means a very expensive storage vendor here and the same very expensive storage vendor there, which is, you know, not cost effective because you got one big box of storage and you're not using it. It's just sitting there hoping that you don't need to use it. What it is not, as I kind of already said, it is not failover clustering. If inside A, one of the virtual machines goes down, or one of the hosts goes down, you got a cluster that will take over. It is, however, availability when the entire site goes down and you got a secondary site that has Hyper-V replica. By the way, can you have Hyper-V replica within the same site? Yes. But then, of course, if the entire site bursts down, well, there goes your defense plan, right? It's pretty flexible in deployment. You can use it yourself. I mean, you can have a head office, you can have a branch office, you can have it in the same sites, maybe somewhere at building A, building B, or different floors, or whatever your different data centers are. That's all perfectly possible. And you can see, in this case, in the head office, we've got expensive storage over there. And the branch office, we basically bought a very cheap NAS somewhere, and it takes over. Will the performance be the same thing when you do a failover? Probably not. Do you care at that moment? Also probably not, as long as everything is still available. But it's also perfectly possible that when you're a service provider, you're going to use Hyper-V replica to your hoster's data center, to your own data center, which means you can have customers who only got one site that will replicate their service, whether it's from local storage or maybe from file shares or whatever else solution they have, straight to your data center. And in case something goes wrong, you as a hoster have different possibilities. You might just copy the replica onto a USB drive, take your motorcycle, drive to the customer and give them their VMs back. Or you might say, you got a problem, no problem, we spin up it in our data center. You pay for it, of course, but we spin it up, and you have a remote desktop session or a website or whatever connect straight to their VMs. So different possibilities, and certainly in the scenario of a hoster, if they think a little bit, they can not only offer part of disaster recovery for a customer, but if they think a little bit more service-oriented around it, they know they can have additional services as well for those customers. If you are running today Windows Server 2012 and you haven't started it with Hyper-V Replica, but you do want to, I would advise you think about upgrading first to 2012 R2. There are some major enhancements there in Hyper-V Replica. If you got nothing yet, well, then you start with 2012 R2 as well. If you want to stay with 2012, it's possible, but there are some differences. To start with, starting from 2012 R2, you can do extended replication, which means now you have a primary server at the primary site, which you can replicate to a secondary site, and even continue replicating to a tertiary site. And this becomes very interesting for service providers again. Yeah? But also for some companies that will use it as an extension of the replication. Also new in 2012 R2 are the intervals. In 2012, you had one interval, 5 minutes, every 5 minutes, which means possible data loss is 4 minutes and 59 seconds and a little bit more. Now you can choose 30 seconds, 5 minutes, or 15 minutes. Do know if you are extended replicating and your first choice is 5 minutes, the second choice cannot be 30 seconds. Or if the first choice is 15 minutes, then the second choice will have to be 15 minutes as well. And in the second replication, you never are able to select 30 seconds in the first place. Think about that as well when you plan. But that is one of the additional possibilities you have with 2012 R2. Now, it is asynchronous. It's not synchronous. You heard this morning that there's going to be something new in Windows Server vNext, which is storage replication. They kind of name it Microsoft within the same breath as, oh, we have Hyper-V replication, and now we will have storage replication. They're two different solutions, two different technologies, but in the end, the idea is the same, with a big difference. This will be replicated on the Hyper-V level, and storage will replicate really on the storage level. But this will remain asynchronous, which means there's also always a lag. There's always the 30 seconds behind, right? Or the 5 minutes or the 15 minutes, okay? And as I already explained, we got the primary VM. We kind of create this log file, this message that we need to send over. We send it over to the replica host, apply it to the replica virtual machine, and then you're back up to date. Now, of course, when people never worked with Hyper-V Replica before, and I go back one slide, first thing they ask me, why would I ever want to choose 5 minutes or 50 minutes when I can have 30 seconds? The reason for that is resources. We're going to come back on that one as well. Cool. Now, resiliency. This is very important. There are solutions out there that claim that they are replication solutions, but that have some issues with failures. Because if you're replicating, in most cases, you're replicating over a wide area network. Now, everybody who knows and deals with wide area networks, they know sometimes things go wrong. You can't connect to the secondary site. The internet is down, as we like to say, which, of course, is not true, but you get where I'm going. So there are some issues. Now, in some cases, that means that that software will need to restage the entire replica. Now, if you got a 100-gigabyte virtual machine that you need to restage, you don't want that. That takes quite some time. What they built in is retry and resume. Now, in some cases, it will be so long that Hyper-V Replica basically doesn't know anymore where it was, so you will need to do the restaging again, which hopefully you don't have to, but sometimes it happens. But in most cases, if the failure didn't take too long, he will be able to retry, has a connection again, resume everything, and everything will continue. It also has the possibility to manage virtual machine mobility, something which has been said in the keynote as well. you know, your life migrating your virtual machines. It's on host A today, it's on host B today, tomorrow, and then it goes to C and whatever. It doesn't mean you have to break the replication and start it again. There is a perfect possibility within the cluster, across clusters, with a broker rule to make sure that replica knows where the VM is, and if it's being moved, it's being moved. I just continue how it works. More on that as well. It's one of the few, there are a few out there, that's true, but it's also one of the few that's actually fully supporting Linux. All Linux distros that are supported in Hyper-V with the integration tools, certainly with 2012 R2 and the integration tools within Linux, they can perfectly support Hyper-V replica, which means you've got file system consistent snapshots and you can do IP address injection. I'm going to talk a little bit deeper on that one in a couple of slides, but important to know is that if you're moving it to another site and you start over there, there might be the possibility that you need to change the IP address. You might not have stretched VLANs, you might be in a completely different subnet, you need to take care of that, or your machine boots, but can connect to a wet network, right? Okay, now, in the interest of time, what I've got here are a few demos. They're actually recorded, so I can distribute it, or better said, System Center Universe Asia is going to distribute them afterwards, so you can see them for themselves. These are very simple. How do I set up the replica on a host? I have a couple of more. I've got in total 5 or 6 of these demos, which you can use to learn how it works through the GUI or through PowerShell. Again, I'm coming back to PowerShell, okay? But I'm not going to show them. One of the things you do need to know is, from the moment you're setting up replica, you will get a question which by default, and I know that very well because I had to fix it a few times with customers, everybody answers no. And that's, he will ask you, do I need to enable the rules on the firewall? Now, normally this is the moment I'm going to ask, who of you is using the Windows firewall on their servers? See no hands? I do see hands this time. But think about that. It's not the first implementation I see. They say it can't replicate just because they said no, but are using the Windows firewall. If you're using any other firewall solution, know that you need to enable those rules as well. Port 80 or 443. Port 80 means you're working in the same domain, you're interconnected, and you're just sending over the replica unencrypted. 443 will encrypt it. You need to work with a certificate. But that also means you can do it between different domains without domain authentication. So that might be very interesting in certain scenarios. Okay? You need to choose that when you enable the replication. Good thing about Windows Firewall is now that it's got this name, so if you want to use PowerShell, you can just use enable net firewall rule, the display name, done. Okay. More PowerShell is when you want to enable replica on more than one server. One of the examples would be that you're replicating from one cluster to another cluster. At that moment, you need to have a broker role because the virtual machine can jump within the cluster wherever it is. Now, you can start by manually enabling this on every server, which probably takes some time. You don't have the time. Or you just use a simple PowerShell script that runs over those hosts and enable it for you. Very simple, set VM replication server, replication enabled true, and then your parameters. Write it once, use it all the time. Okay? All these scripts are in the slides, so you can easily use them or reuse them afterwards. Cool. Now, very important is you enable replication on a host. That doesn't mean you're actually replicating something. It's not that automatically all of your VMs suddenly start to replicate. That's probably a bad thing as well. You probably don't want that. You're probably going to make a selection of different virtual machines that you want to replicate, and others where you're like, you know what, if I lose those, okay, I have other solutions to recover those. The SLA is longer. It doesn't matter that much, right? So what you need to do is, for each virtual machine, you need to right-click on the virtual machine, if you're using the UI, and then say, well, now it's time to replicate. You choose your target host, you choose your interval, and off you go. Same thing, of course, can be achieved by using PowerShell again, with one big difference. when you're doing it through the UI, you will get the possibility to start the replication immediately, to schedule it, or to seed it, which means you can take your virtual machine, take a copy, an export to a hard drive, drive it across the country, put it at the replication site, seed it, and continue. If you're going to use PowerShell, you can do the same thing, but many people forget this last initial comment, start VM initial replication. If you don't do that, it will never start, and you will be wondering why it's not happening. Well, you need to do that. UI, it's built in. PowerShell, you need to do it yourself with that additional comment. Just a quick tip. Already talked about it, virtual machine mobility. Site A, we got a virtual machine, it's got a cluster. Site B, maybe a cluster as well, but it doesn't need to be a cluster. It's not cluster to cluster. It can be cluster to a single host to a cluster, whatever you can imagine, okay? But important, if you're doing that, the VM moves, this link gets broken. Instead of rebuilding everything, it will automatically regenerate the link without the need of reseeding and continue the replication. What are the prerequisites? Well, all the primary servers must be authorized. Because when you create a server, when you say this is going to be a replication Hyper-V host, you have the possibility to say, well, accept replication from every host, which is kind of a security issue. Or you're going to define specific hosts. Now, if you said that first server is allowed to replicate to site B, but you forget to mention server 2, the virtual machine moves, you can see you've got a problem, so think about that. And when you are talking about replica migration in clusters, in your cluster you need to install the role called Hyper-V Replica Broker. Is it difficult? No. It's literally go to your cluster, add role, choose Hyper-V Replica Broker. That's about it. I think it's two more necks, but that's about it. So it's not that difficult, but you need to use it, of course, otherwise it won't. Good. We're happy, we set up, we're replicating, you know, time to do some tests. It's kind of like a backup plan, right? How do you know how good your backup is if you never tested it? How do you know you can start your replica if you basically never tried it before? Now, when Microsoft looked at this, they had a few things in their mind. With Hyper-V Replica, what you need to be doing is testing the disaster recovery plan is necessary. That's something we need to be able to give. Site maintenance was another idea they had. So imagine that you have production site, you've got your replica site. What if I do the failover to the replica site? It's online, people can still work. Then I do some maintenance to my Hyper-V host, I do some patches, I don't know what I want to do, but some maintenance, and then reverse the replication again. You will have a bit of downtime, but it will be much more limited than you do the entire maintenance cycle. Is it the best idea? Well, if you have a cluster, probably not. You probably can do it with zero downtime. But it is an option for those who can't afford to do it with zero downtime, to keep it very limited. And of course, we want to make sure if we think there's going to be a disaster that we can do failover. And then the worst case scenario, if there's a sudden disaster, that we can do the failover as well. So let's look at a few of the options you have. First thing is the planned failover. Planned failover is something you use to test your disaster recovery, or that's site maintenance. Or maybe you feel something is going wrong and could go wrong fastly, and you can do a planned because it's still running. Okay? You will have zero data loss at that time. Because you do plant, that means you can ship the last logs over to the other side, zero data. But you will have downtime. Cool thing about this is that you can reverse the replication. So the moment your primary site is back online, you can start reversing it, so all the changes that have been made in the meantime on the replica side will go to the production side, and then you can do the process again and be back online on your production side. Pretty cool. So, what happens? We've got an ongoing replication. We decide something needs to be done, and we choose planned failover. We're going to shut down the primary virtual machine. That primary virtual machine will send over its last logs, so you have efficiently a full version on the other side, or the latest version on the other side. We will start the replica virtual machine on side B, and we will start reversing the replication in case we can reach this again. Okay? If you finally are happy, production site is back up, site maintenance done, or whatever is fixed, you can do the plant failover in the reverse direction, and you're back at your original situation or scenario, and you're a happy man. Again, there is some downtime because you need to shut down that virtual machine that it can send over the last log, right? If you want to do this, and again, I've got a video on it that you will be able to download after this session, but in terms of time, you're going to start this on the primary virtual machine. So on the primary virtual machine, you're going to say, I need to shut down and then do a planned failover. You will end on the replica virtual machine. Okay. No duplicate virtual machine is created. Time frame that you want to run this depends on you, of course. How long does the site maintenance take? How long does it take before we can fix what the issue is in the production side? And so on and so on. Okay. Microsoft recommend that you try this out every 6 months. Remember, downtime. But I think everybody can at least every 6 months find a time slot of a couple of minutes to do this. How long does a planned failover take? Well, if you want to do a planned failover for one virtual machine, it takes 10 minutes to boot on the primary side. Might take 15 minutes on the replica side because it's got slower hardware or slower storage. That is your time frame. Shut down, send over the last logs, and then start it up. That's your downtime. Okay. Data loss, nothing. All right. What else do we got? We got also test failover, and this is also very interesting. Test failover is something you can try out without touching your production service. So what you're going to do is you're going to test every recovery point that you might have of the replica. And what you're actually going to do is you're going to make a copy of it from the replica, sort of. When we say copy, what actually happens at the back, it's some sort of snapshot where you will keep the differences, and when you decide to kill the test failover or stop with the test, you won't have touched your replica server, which means there's no issues over there. You can configure upfront some kind of isolated network so you can do your tests. Now, this is actually also a solution that you might be able to use to test a service pack or patching or an upgrade of your application, or whatever else you want to test. After that, you see it works, you just kill this test failover, and you can do it in your real production. Okay? Some quick diagram of how we like to say it. You got a few virtual machines, they're replicated. Well, in that test network, we're gonna start the test versions, which you make at that time the replica kind of read-only, some sort of snapshot against it to keep the difference, and you can work without effectively touching your production. Cool thing about this, no downtime, no touching of your production. Replication just continues. Even if you're running with a test environment, just continues. Microsoft says recommended once a month, more or less. Why? It's easy. No downtime. You can do it whenever you want during the day. Do know that it costs some resources on your replica host. So if your replica host is also hosting production virtual machines, do know that you take away CPU, memory, and IOPS on that storage as well. Okay? Got a demo of that as well. But all right. And then finally, you've got the worst case scenario, failover. Something happened, you didn't saw it coming, it's unplanned, boom, something broke. So there's an issue. Now to start with, when you do a failover, the first thing the replica is going to do is actually use remote WMI to test if the primary is still alive. Why is that? To prevent split brain. Imagine that you do a failover on the replica side, because you need it over there, because we assume production is gone. but the production server is still working, you suddenly have two virtual machines, the same name, same IDs. That might cause issues in your infrastructure. We refer to this as split brain. You don't want to be in that situation. Okay? So we'll do a test to see. If you're using multiple recovery points, and that is something I haven't told you that, but you can do replication and then choose to have multiple recovery points as well. Maximum 24 in Windows Server 2012, 16 in Windows Server, 24 in Windows Server 2012 R2, 16 in Windows Server 2012. It's some kind of snapshot of a previous point in time, which you can revert to. If you choose 24, every 1 hour you will have one of those. Okay? That means if something goes wrong and you know, it happened 30 minutes ago, so basically my replica has got the same issues already, but I can revert back to 1 hour and start that specific point in time. Yeah? So you can choose that. And then when you see that failover is completely okay, you need to do one additional step. One additional step that many times got forgotten. You need to say, yes, I'm going to do a merge, apply it. If you don't do it, that means that with the failover, the Hyper-V replica is still thinking it might be that he won't keep using this. It might be that the situation in the production was not an issue, but just a drop dead of the one link. Everybody went crazy, do the failover, while in reality, there was no real issue. So you need to decide at a certain moment, yes, this is the failover, I had no choice, and you will do a merge to complete it. Okay? That sometimes gets forgotten, and then you're kind of running on snapshots, and that will slow down your environment as well. All right, failover started on the replica side, on the replica virtual machine. No duplicate virtual machine, it's really that thing that's on your storage that we start on. Time frame, how long will you stay on the failover side? Well, hopefully not long, but you know, in a real disaster it can take very, very long. Recommended frequency, this is literally what Microsoft recommends, never, because you know, if you have to do it, it's not a good thing. Replication is completely stopped. Data loss, well, when was the last replication from the primary side? 30 seconds ago, 5 minutes ago, 50 minutes ago? You don't know. Is there downtime? Of course, you lost the entire primary side. By the time you booted all of your replica virtual machines, it takes time. It's not instantly, magically, here we go. It takes time, right? Good. Another thing you need to think of, which Microsoft will not do for you, is the network configuration on the replica machine. Now, I already said it, when you have your failover replicas, they're somewhere on another site. It might be another VLAN, probably not stretched, maybe another subnet. So you need to configure that. Otherwise, you start with 10.22.100.whatever. You start the virtual machine over there with the same IP address, unreachable. What's happening? Well, you need to change the IP address. Do you need to RDP into that box and then manually change it? No. Luckily, imagine that you got 50 virtual machines to replicate and then do everything manually. That would be painful. In the settings of your replica, you can choose, whenever I need to boot my replica, change the IP address. That's the manual way. There are a few other ways that you can use as well, by using System Center, for example, that can use an IP address of the pool within Virtual Machine Manager to make it a little bit more easier for you. Yeah. Other ways are, don't use static IP addresses, use DHCP, for example. That's also a possibility, and so on. And then if you're using network virtualization, if you're at that part already, then you can preserve IP addresses as well to inject those into the virtual machine when it starts. Yeah. Now, there's one thing that a lot of people forget at that moment, and that's update your DNS records. So imagine, what was the name again? SQL VM, right? I'm pinging SQL VM on the primary host. It works. I do a failover. I ping SQL VM again, and it never replies, although I actually see it running on my replica host. Well, DNS never got updated, so it's still pointing to the wrong address. Theoretically, this should solve itself. Unfortunately, when we're talking about this type of scenarios, what mostly happens is that your clients that want to connect to the applications on those servers suddenly start working from home because bye-bye primary site, and they never get those updates. They are still with the cached DNS from the last time they were in the office. And they will call you for days. It doesn't work, doesn't work. Yes, it does, I can do it. Well, that's the reason. So think about that. Cool. We already talked about this. When do you want to consider this? Hosters certainly want to consider this as an additional service to their customers. SMB want to consider this because it's a very cost-effective solution that adds up to your disaster recovery plan. So nobody within the SMB now has an excuse anymore. DR is too expensive. Well, this is already a cheap method, right? Application workloads, it doesn't care about. Although, remember what I said about Exchange. They don't like it. Doesn't matter what kind of storage you're using. And the deployment is rather easy. Write a couple of PowerShell scripts, steal them from my slides, reuse them from my slides, you go. Very simple to start. You can do a proof of concept, and you got additional testing. But there are considerations. You can't just enable it in every network and hope it will work. To start with, and this is very critical, network capacity. You're going to have to estimate the rate of the data change, or the churn, as we call it. Because what will happen is, on the block level, the changes will be transferred to the replica site. Now, if one of your virtual machines is changing 100 gigabytes a day, that will put a lot of load on your network. I do hope you don't have that type of VMs, but they do exist. So you need to try and predict what the churn is. Microsoft can't do this for you. You kind of have to look at that yourself. If you have a certain backup solution that actually provides you with incremental backups, then you kind of can use that as well, because then you will see on a daily basis in your reports what the changes are. That can help you. You're also going to have to estimate what the peak usage is. One of the things we see is that in Hyper-V Replica, during certain periods of times in a company, it's sending much more data than in other times. Unfortunately, those are most of the times when the users are working as well. Now, it could be that certain tasks that need to be done, like SQL transforms or some business intelligence on your data, can be done at night when nobody's working, which means those large changes get sent over as well, but it's a better time at night. So think about those things as well. And then, I didn't invent this, this doesn't come from me, but this is the research that they did. And this is uncompressed data transferred in 24 hours. This is a churn, this is not a full virtual machine, just, you know, to make sure, but the difference of your virtual machines that you're replicating. Now, if you got a line between your offices of 512 kbps with 20 milliseconds latency, which is kind of the default we use when we do network testing, then you can see the moment you go over 3, almost 4 gigabyte, and then quickly to 5 gigabyte, the time to apply the changes becomes over 10 minutes. That means your 30-second interval or your 5-minute interval suddenly doesn't work anymore, because the other side doesn't get the data in time and can't apply it in time, and it will always get behind, and after 3 days, Hyper-V Replica will start shouting, I got issues. This doesn't work. And you're like, what? That's the reason. If you get more bandwidth, you will see, of course, that the line is changing. But that also shows, even with a 1.5 Mbps, 20 milliseconds latency, maybe 1% packet loss, if we're talking about a little bit over 10 gigabyte, we're still going towards the 5 minutes. 10 gigabytes of data churn might seem a lot, but most often isn't. You'll get there pretty quickly. Again, think about your backups to see how much churn you're actually doing with incremental backups. So you need to consider that for certain. Second thing you can do is use network throttling, certainly during your business hours. unless the back the bandwidth or the pipe you're using from side A to side B is a dedicated network, which it probably isn't, it's probably the same internet line that you're using where your end users go to the internet, where it's using Facebook or Instagram or some company websites, it doesn't matter. They're using that as well. So during the days, you can use throttling, quality of service, to make sure that Replica can use bandwidth but doesn't steal all the bandwidth of your users. You can use it based on the destination subnet. You can do it based on the destination port. Or you can actually do it based on the application name as well. So you got options, and again, depending on your situation, you're gonna have to choose one of these three. I've added all three of them, rather easy. Again, one PowerShell command. Can you do this through the UI? I don't think so. To be honest, I'm not 100% sure, but I've never seen it that you could do it through the UI in Windows Server, or I must have missed somewhere an option. That might be as well. If you're replicating and you're doing multiple virtual machines in parallel, you have to take some other things into consideration as well. I believe if you look at the network bandwidth, the ideal number of parallel transfers is 3. So that's only 3 VMs at the same time you're replicating over a 1.5 Mbps line. Okay, with a little bit more latency and some packet loss, but still, 3. If you want to replicate 100 virtual machines, this might get difficult. If you, of course, got internal LAN 300 Mbps, maybe even more, then you can see you go to 10. If you only in LAN, and we're talking about gigabits, they won't be that much of an issue. Also, think about that initial replication. Don't send your 100 gigabyte virtual machine to the other side over the internet. Please don't. Even if you have a full weekend, you're probably not going to make it. Unless you got a really, really expensive internet line, but still might get difficult. Seed it. Seed it, put it on a USB device, just using export in the Hyper-V console, move it away, plug it in, copy it, import it, and then say, and now continue replication. Hyper-V Replica is smart enough to realize, the export was at time X, so now we start sending the changes between time X and the time you import. That's perfectly possible. Okay. Backup. I said replication isn't the only thing, so you have to think about backup as well. By default, people will still choose to backup the primary virtual machine. Now, that's one downside, right? Every time you backup the primary virtual machine, you're actually using resources. Resources which you don't like to lose because users are connecting to it. So ideally, you would like to backup the replica virtual machine. In the end, after a couple of minutes, it's exactly the same, right? Very important to know if you do that. First, the replica virtual machine needs to be turned off. Apparently, that will change in the next version of Windows Server. But today, it needs to be turned off. So if you're running on your replica virtual machine, you can't back it up anymore. Certainly if you're doing reversed replication. Now, if the VHD is modified by the replication, your backup will be placed on hold. Now, if you do this every 30 seconds, that means every 30 seconds, your backup gets placed on hold. Not every backup vendor can handle that. Think about it before you start doing it. Just ask your backup vendor, can you do it, yes or no, okay? And lastly, when you do a restore of that virtual machine, and you restore the replica virtual machine, you need to do a full resynchronization, which is logical because you go back a previous point in time somewhere, and the replication is like, what happening? So at that time, you need to do resynchronization. So it can be interesting to get the backup load off your primary virtual machines, of your production loads, but it does require a little bit of thinking and making sure you got the software that actually supports it as well. All right, what about server impact? What about resources? And I really need to get going here. There is, of course, some impact on primary server, and this is exactly one of the reasons why I sometimes refer to other solutions and why I sometimes say it's not for everybody. it takes quite some resources. If you look at the primary server, storage space, if you're replicating every 15 minutes, that means you need a little bit additional storage because those 15 minutes of churn needs to be stored somewhere. So you need to have additional storage on the primary host to start with. Yeah? Storage IOPS, 1.5 times. That's quite a lot. Certainly if you're in an environment where you're stressing out your Hyper-V installations, 1.5 is just too much. So look at it, if you've got some resources available, if your storage can handle it, sure. But 1.5 times on your primary server, that's the production, that's where people are connecting to. The replica server is, yeah, a little bit worse. What's the storage space you need? Well, the original plus the churn that's coming there. And every additional recovery point, remember you can take 24 in R2, will take about 10% of the base VHD. So 40 gigabyte server, every recovery point, another 4 gigs, time 24, see it growing? So you need to have those resources, okay? IOPS, 0.0 times the write IOPS to receive and convert. However, if you're going to have additional recovery points, in 2012, 3 to 5 times more write IOPS. Luckily, in R2, they made some changes to that, and it's now more 1.5 to 2 times. But it's still a lot of more IOPS you need that you could be using for other things. If you have them, that's great. If you don't have them, it might be a lot. What about the memory? Every VHD, not virtual machine, every VHD, every disk or VHDX that you're replicating will cost you around 50 megabytes of memory. Now that doesn't sound much, but 20 VHDs is already a couple of gigabytes, so you need to be specced on memory as well, right? The CPU impact is less than 3%. Even if you're doing 20 VMs, you won't see 20 times 3%, that would be bad, but it doesn't go that high. So on CPU level, it's rather okay. But think about the memory per VHD, and think about those IOPS, besides the networking, of course, that you have in between. All right. One of the downsides in my vision of Hyper-V replica, it's rather difficult to manage Hyper-V replica through Hyper-V Manager. If you got VMM, if you got System Center Operations Manager, you can do a little bit more things. Again, those two comments are the only ones you need to know what kind of things you can do with PowerShell. I'm going to be a little bit more quick about this, but use PowerShell. You can easily create a very small script. You can actually download it in the internet, just Google, ping it, sorry, and then you will find one that will give you an HTML page every 5 minutes what the state of your replication is, simply through PowerShell. Some tips, think about the bandwidth control. Make sure you think about that. Don't forget the firewall. If you got a cluster, don't forget to install the replica broker role. That's forgotten a lot as well. Do you want your traffic encrypted or not? If yes, make sure you use the certificate solution and not the simple HTTP solution. Which VHDX? In a Windows server, what does cause the most churn? That's your page file. If you deploy a virtual machine, make sure your page file is on a separate VHDX or VHD, and then exclude it from replication. You will have less data that you need to send over. Because in the end, if you start a replica VM, your page file is empty. So you're sending over data which you don't need after all. So exclude it, put it on a VHD, and then do the replication. And watch out for resynchronization, because by default, and you can't change that by the way, if Hyper-V replica notices that you need resynchronization because it was too long between that they talked to each other, it will just do that. If that's in the middle of the day, you will see that your primary virtual machines will lose resources and your end users might phoning you saying, hey, things are going slow, what's happening? This is, okay? There is a capacity planner. This is a download URL. Cool thing about this, you can run this, you can let it run for 24 hours, for a week, for 2 weeks, for all doesn't matter. It doesn't put a load on production server and replica server, but it will do simulations. And in the end, you got a very decent report that will tell you what's the churn. One of the ways you can calculate as well, how many memory are you using for this? What's the IOPS we've been seeing on both sides and so on? So at least you have a good idea what you will lose. Is it completely perfect, that report? No, but it's pretty close to what reality is. It would be very impressive if it actually would be perfect. Okay. Out of band, initial replication, talked about it. This is the way you do it. Create the replica on the primary side, choose send initial copy, move over the data, and import it, and that's about it. You can do this with PowerShell as well if you want to automate lots of the stuff. Downside is, by default, it will attach this very strange long GUID to the name of the VM, which you need to query. This is the actual GUID of a VM, but you need to know it. You need to be able to attach it yourself if you want to script it completely. So that's probably the most difficult part if you want to do some scripting. Again, I got a demo about it. Can you save disk space? Because, you know, I just talked a lot about disk space. There are some possibilities. You can use dynamic disks at the replica site. This is the entire procedure. I know it says hosting provider, but, you know, you can be your own hosting provider. And that way you can save disk space. Do know, if you then actually start on your replicas, you're running your production virtual machines on dynamic disks. So that is something to keep in mind. And you can use it through PowerShell as well with convert things. Today, Microsoft supports online resizing. That is supported in Hyper-V Replica as well. No need to resync or something like that. But you need to do it on both sides manually. So if you're resizing your disk on the production virtual machine, you need to think that you need to do that on the replica virtual machine as well. I've heard that this will change also in the next versions. Let's hope so. But today you need to do it. Very important, however, if you have all the recovery points at that moment and the disk was bigger and you resized it to smaller, then all of these recovery points are basically throw them away. Because you can't start them, because he will try to merge an older recovery point to the replica VM, and it says, no, the disks are not correct, smaller, I got an issue. So you go into error. All right, upgrading to R2, is that possible if you're using 2012 today? Perfectly possible. First upgrade your replica servers, or migrate them to a new R2 server if that's your preferred method, and then your primary server. You can do that seamlessly. You don't need to configure everything again. You can do that without any issue. this is one of my favorite. Can you use Windows Server deduplication on your replica server? They actually say, yeah, you can. And it does work. I've been testing this. It will be slower. And again, if you start a virtual machine on the replica side on a deduplicated volume, Microsoft does not support that for your production loads. It does support VDIs on deduplicated volume, but not production servers. Again, maybe, hopefully, next time. Okay? Use the best practice analyzer. Run it. It's in Server Manager. You can do PowerShell as well, of course. And see what it tells you. Gives you errors, gives you work. That doesn't mean you have to actually follow these rules. They're best practices, but it gives you an idea how you're installing and configuring everything. These are all of the different rules you have. I'm not going to talk too much about it. I'm already kind of over time. And you can do this with PowerShell as well. All right. Last thing I want to say is about site recovery. Now, I think one session ago, there was here an entire session about site recovery. If you have seen that, I can go quickly talking about it. But with Hyper-V Replica, site recovery in Azure, you can use that as well to do automated DR testing. Or you can replicate from your own site to another site and then use Azure to automate it. But Microsoft has been working very hard on this one and will have more options now where you can actually do the replication channel Hyper-V replica, SQL always on, Sun, and then with System Center from one side to another side. You can use InMatch Scout now to do VMware physical to another location. That was not the idea. It can also stay within your own site and you replicate to Azure if you got Hyper-V, and in worst case you start everything in Azure and start paying, of course, for the resources you're using. And soon, as been said this morning as well, I think by Simon, and it's gone again for some reason, it will be able to do that with VMware as well. Okay? These are some of the possibilities, but again, this has been presented already today, so I don't need to go in depth. Some additional information on this URL, and you will get, of course, a slide, so you can copy the URL. You will find an entire white paper that I actually am the author of that. It's about 60 pages long, and it goes in depth to everything that I talked about during this, unfortunately, only 50 minutes. But we'll explain everything in depth. We'll tell you how to do. We'll explain the PowerShell scripts one by one. So if you want to go further, it's free. Just download it and start working with it. With that, if there are any questions, I believe I need to say use the microphone. And if not, thank you for your time, and hopefully see you tomorrow in one of my other sessions. Thank you.